Welcome back to the Lawn Hustle. We're here to help your lawn care business level up and build a legit, thriving business and create freedom for yourself. I am your host, Andy Wilson, and today we are diving into a subject every business owner faces: how to stop working in your business and to start working on your business. When I first started out, I was on every mower. I trimmed every edge. I trimmed every bush. I blew off every sidewalk. But there came a point where I realized if I wanted growth and if I wanted to scale my business and take it to the next level, I had to bring on people that would help me fulfill my vision, help my dream come to pass. So that's what we want to talk about tonight. And tonight we have a very special guest with us, Neil. He's from Voltage, and we're glad he's a guest with us tonight. Neil, thank you for joining the Lawn Hustle.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So what does it actually mean to work on your business and not in your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. And some individuals might answer differently. Obviously, we have a slightly different business models, but at the end, when you run a business, the business of doing a business, regardless of its services or software or physical products, ends up in kind of the same conundrum in the growth cycle, where you move out of the "I'm the guy who hustles, I got things moving, I spent more time, energy, attention, and money than anybody else to get where I'm at," and then how do I actually bridge that gap between being the, you know, sole producer into a multi-producer and a replication of my efforts, right? A force multiplier, as we refer to it. And one of the ways I've found to get myself out of that way is, instead of employing people, which I know is a way a lot of businesses can run, and maybe run more so in the services industry, even though I'm more in the physical product online space, is to train people into those positions, to empower them to become successful, and then partner with them on areas of the business where they have a greater aptitude for certain parts of the operations or control or marketing or, you know, finance or whatever. And as we've done that, I spent the better part of my last 12 years training up people in our business model to work with them one-on-one for 12 and 24 and 3 years and 4 years and 5 years, and get them successful in a business they understand how to run. They understand the profit and loss, the services, the support, the customers, the business of doing the business. And then said, "Hey, would you be interested in partnering with me? You're a really great operator. You do these things really well. We trained you to do them really well. Would you partner with us?" And that has created an ability to incentivize individuals out of their success, not make them an employee of a system they tried to get out of in the first place, but then partner with them in profit sharing for the success of the whole company. And that's allowed us now to have more than $20 million a year under our control. And I have 5 operators. And I'm training my daughter into one area of that business right now at the ground level, so she can start working at 17 into the business, which is great because she's learning a skill and a trade and something that she can, you know, enter the business at the ground floor level doing, and then empower them in whatever necessary to do the job that, you know they need to do without me watching over them, micromanaging them, and, you know, having to track every detail of what they do. So to get out of me working in the business that I started and did all the hustle and did all the work and did all the activities, it took, you know, years of finding the right people to train them into the right roles with the right aptitude, and then empowering them to do whatever is necessary without me having to watch every minute of it, and then finding out they could be in a trust situation, and then letting them go, and in essence, getting out of their way. And it's taken years to do that, but in the end, I don't have any employees. I have a lot of partners in my operations that are incentivized by sharing.
Well, tell our listeners what it is you do.
Yeah. Well, and it's probably maybe a little bit different than some of the individuals might have thought when we started this conversation, because I'm actually in the physical product world. We provide services and support to some companies. We have our own products and businesses that we run. and manage in the online space. We use the private label branding for manufacturing products that we control and own ourselves within trademark and intellectual property. We sell them on multiple channels. Amazon is one location. We sell on TikTok, Shopify. We even sell in retail stores with some of our products that have a mass retailing opportunity. And so we brand and build those products, build those businesses up. And the goal is to build them to an exit and do it within, you know, 5 years to hit certain metrics of run rate and growth, and then sell them off to a private equity company that we help form called Patriot Growth Capital. So we're actually operating members of that company, and it is a veteran-backed, veteran-owned, veteran initiative to build these companies up and then employ veterans into whatever level makes sense to employ them in, give them opportunities for skill and growth, tutelage, and then at some point find out who could be raised up to run the entire business and maybe even acquire the business away from us after 5 years of doing that mentorship. So that kind of turns into business as a mission as we grow and build these companies. To then employ people for the purpose of, you know, supporting veterans and their community and their families.
Well, we support our veterans. We thank them for their service. Absolutely. We honor their service. And so I appreciate you doing that with the veterans. That really touches me. So thank you.
Yeah, my father's a veteran. He was a 2-tour Vietnam vet, served on a destroyer. I did unfortunately not have the honor of going. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, and I got rejected. As I'm 6'5", that wasn't really the problem, except for all my height is in my waist up. So when I sat down in the F-16E training cockpit, they couldn't close the lid with the helmet on. So they're like, sorry, you're out. I'm like, well, crap. Guess I'm going to college, which was a waste of time too. Anyways, I went through 3 years of college and then dropped out because I'm like, well, that was a waste of time. Yeah.
So why do you think so many business operators or owners, whether it's in the service industry or the food industry or wherever, why do you think so many people get stuck doing the day-to-day instead of the scaling?
There's this, what I've typically found is that there's this sense of powerful ownership that comes with the risk you took to get that to a certain position, and it becomes very difficult to trust other people to deliver. You may have someone who sort of does a C player game, and you really thought you hired an A player, so now you have to kind of make up for their work, and you're like, well, that was a waste of time. Or you get yourself a B player, and you're like, hey, they're going to do really great, and they definitely don't turn into an A player. And the problem with hiring an A player a lot of times, who could do a really good job, is they usually cost more than most people are willing to pay for things they can do themselves. And so they get caught in a bit of quagmire of, I could do this better and no one else can because I can't find anybody else to do it. So really what they have is a management by exception problem. They have got their risk to reward ratio imbalanced, because then they think, well, if I pay this person this much money, well, I'm not paying myself that money anymore if I have to pay it to that person. And so they don't see the forward thinking opportunity of which particular role is most important in the business. And they get confused in the business management, sales, marketing, and development role with the operations, control, and fiduciary management roles. And they tend to can't figure out exactly which one of those roles they fit the best. And does that sound about right to you too? Because it's my experience. What ends up happening is they try to figure out that they feel they're most comfortable in their risk being the operator. When in actuality, the challenge of becoming someone who works on a business and not in it is to get out of the operator control. It's to get into the business of growth, development, and forwarding the company so additional clients or sales or marketing initiatives will come out to create more revenue. So therefore, you can hire more people and build the business a little bit more. And I would usually say that it gets down to their risk to reward ratio, and it's sometimes out of balance.
Well, what systems or processes have you put in place that allows you to step back from the daily grind and work on the business and not every day in the grind working in the business?
Yeah, great question. A lot of people have heard of key performance indicators, but they don't always understand what they are or how to apply them. So it's an older methodology, a little more corporate. What I prefer is one called objectives and key results, what are called OKRs. And for each role in a business, whether it's the operator, the business development guy, the sales guy, the finance guy, or whatever, the role has a defined set of revenue generating metrics. Every role should be in a forward revenue generating position, or it simply shouldn't exist. And you're like, well, man, I'm just the one that mows the lawn. How am I in a revenue generating position? I'm in an executable operational position. It's like, no, if you've done a great job, if you've engaged the person and said, hey, could we come back again in 2 weeks and do your lawn? If you said, hey, do any of your neighbors want to, you know, get a lawn job too? Could I speak to them? Then you're in a revenue generating role, right? So every person has that opportunity, but I don't think everybody sees them that way. So what objectives and key results do is they say a specific objective that should be accomplished by that role. And then there are three key results that allow that objective to occur, right? And the three key results that should be defined are should be relatively simple, but each of them should align with the revenue generating goal. So it would be how many people, you know, you mowed the lawn in that neighborhood, but how many other neighbors did you talk to while you were there? That could be a key result, right? Well, I'm going to make an effort to speak to five additional neighbors every time I finish a lawn in that neighborhood, right? So they could set up certain metrics of performance and then incentivize them that each of those clients that come through, when they hit those certain metrics on their peer review every 90 days, they're going to get a bonus. They're going to get a pay increase. They're going to get something beneficial to the new business that they generated because they took that effort as part of their key result. And if there's just three key results to my particular objective of my, you know, role in the company, then what happens is they know their objectives. You only have to manage that exception maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes a week because everybody knows what those objectives should be. They've helped define those objectives, so they're comfortable understanding what they are, what the language is, and what the output of that should be. And then they understand if they don't meet it, the real clear criteria is you have another week to resolve. You have 2 weeks to resolve any issue with your objectives that maybe isn't mine to resolve, but it is yours to resolve as a part of your role. If there's something I can do to help you or you need solving that problem, you know, we can solve that problem. Simply saying I can't is not an option, right? Saying, you know, there's a problem to solve. What are we going to do to troubleshoot it? I'll help you through that process. And then I only need to meet with that person, you know, for 15 minutes each week and just say, hey, what do you need? How are you doing? Where are you going? And how are you going to get there next week? And the objectives should be laid out. And if the performance is there, the person met their performance, they know their goals and their outcome. I know that they're, you know, doing the roles that are necessary to provide that outcome. And they know they get a bonus if they do. And they also know that they'll self-correct if they don't. Because if they don't correct in the next 2 weeks, then there will be a situation by which we understand you are now not fulfilling your obligation as an employee or a contractor. And thus, you know what the outcome will be. Termination, right? You have an opportunity. This or you will walk yourself out of the business. And it's a non-conflicting kind of situation because you both agreed at the very beginning, what are the boundaries? All right, here are the boundaries. So we don't go into this with any ambiguity. We go into it with an understanding that this is your role. Here's what's going to happen. If you're in the lead development role of opening the doors and finding out new businesses and you go along with each crew and you're out the door trying to talk to those five people because that's your job, then there's a particular criteria that says here are the three key indicators of your sales success role, and you will receive a bonus, you know, every 90 days that these roles are hit. You were rewarded when the company's rewarded. So I prefer objectives and key results because they're a little more simpler. They can be defined by the individuals, and it's very clear the boundaries between positive and negative.
So in order to get your employees or your partners to that point where they can understand the objective, they understand the vision and the goal. Do you have to spend a lot of time in training employees to get them?
Yeah, you would if you had employees. And I did once have 12 employees. And we managed about 21,000 square foot of warehouse with those employees. And quite honestly, you know, that was a situation that I'm going to refer to as my crime of opportunity. It sounded really good at the start, and it looked really sexy on paper, you know. Oh, we got a warehouse, blah blah blah. We got these people, you know, all these trucks are rolling, so we're great. We're moving 10 trucks a week of semi trucks through there, and everything looks really good. And we actually ran that business to eight figures, but it was not, you know, as profitable as it should have been, and it came with a lot of problems. And the problems were that, you know, people, when left to their own devices, a lot of times, if they're not the quality players, you know, that you think they are, they'll tend to get in trouble or just not do things, or they tend to just earn their paycheck and not move along. And so I thought, well, there's got to be a better way to do this. So in my process, we changed it into a, you know, I attract the right individual who's interested in doing what we do. And then I spend 12 months with them one-on-one to support that process of their growth. And as I raised up people that became successful, I just asked the members of my business builder group, who wants to train with me on new members, and I'll incentivize you out of profits, you know, as we train new members. And so I ended up with, you know, three coaches who are business builders who started with us and built successful companies and built them off of our playbook and our methodology. And now they train along with us. So I basically kind of backed myself out of the training role and have inserted them into the meetings. And they now train and work with the individuals, answer the questions, and deal with a lot. And my job is just kind of hover over and make sure everything is being needed. We have weekly reports that are produced on everybody's status. And their individuals are now doing the ones that are doing all the coaching every week, not me. And so with that, I backed myself out with people who know the process, became successful, and now are training others on the success of that process. And I get to see how they perform. And if they have any questions, they come to us and they say, hey, these are things we need to know or things we want to be trained on. And I support them in more of an exception rule. So I've been able to back myself out of that, which has given us a lead way to support a lot more.
Well, let's take a short break and hear a word from my show sponsor, Eartha Pro.
And losing track of jobs. Eartha Pro back office software makes it simple for solo guys and small lawn care and landscaping crews. Schedule, invoice, and organize all in the same place. We also have a mobile app and integrate into QuickBooks. Sign up at earthapro.com with promo code thelawnhustle11 for a $50 Amazon gift card, 10% off, and personalized onboarding. Eartha Pro, you run the outside work, we run the office.
We certainly appreciate Eartha Pro being a sponsor of our show, and I encourage you to contact them if you're looking for a system to help you operate your business. At what point did you realize you needed to start building a team instead of trying to do it all yourself?
Well, if you're familiar with the Kiyosaki Quadrant at all, the four stages of individual growth, self-employed, There, if you're progressing through that process of an ultimate goal of becoming a business owner, then you're going to find that, again, the risk to reward ratio is going to change as you try to grow that business. So as I started to identify what are my key skills, what are my key values to this business, it's tough to balance the sales and operations, right? So what I've discovered was really at the end of the day, I'm the sales, I'm the front end, I'm the marketing, I'm the engine that drives the business development conversation and this kind of stuff. That's actually what I'm really good at. It's where I should stay in my lane. And then about 12 years ago, I met someone whose lane is operations, who's became my partner. And over 12 years, we've developed these businesses together because the two components of who we are have made one person. So it's almost a business marriage relatable to my marriage, which has been around for 18 years now. And my wife is the other half of my brain. So she's very different than me in many, many ways. And she's a kind of a polar opposite in some ways. But because of that, we balance each other out because I'm more of like, let's jump off the bridge and figure this out on the way down. She's kind of like, no, we need to make a list before we jump, right? No, these are the things we need. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, my brain doesn't operate that way, but I get it. And now they've kind of figured out, both her and my partner, after being together for so long, my business partner has figured out, well, I'll just pack a bag and have it ready. And so if Neil says jump, we jump off the bridge, and then I'll try to figure out how to build out whatever it is on the way down and put some guardrails around it and some guidelines and make sure we don't crash. My wife has kind of been that person too. And with that flexibility to be who I am, I've pushed the boundaries of things they would probably normally not do, risk or think about or challenge in the business or life. And they've come along and been expanded that way. And because they're strong and make lists and have a particular process by which they execute things as individuals, they pulled me back a little and said, hey, what about this? Or, hey, I think we should go that direction and instead of this way. And I understand what you're saying, but what if we did it that way? And because I am now a big enough person to be okay with criticism, I've been willing to accept them taking lead on things that I thought maybe should go one way, but they want to go a different way. And I'm like, that's okay. We'll go your way instead. I understand what you're saying. I understand this risk. I understand that challenge. Let's do it this way instead. And I think what you do as you grow is you give that up to other people. You actually move through those quadrants with really becoming a business owner who is allowing others to fail and be okay with it. Let them challenge and figure out and not have to control every aspect. And as I've done that and gotten older, I realized that, you know, there are many of those people who, when you give them that control, that trust, they don't want to disappoint you. They're going to do anything possible not to. And so the trick then becomes to make sure there's a comfortable place of open conversation and dialogue where you don't shoot their ideas down or make them feel inferior or whatever the case may be. Maybe they're going a little slower. You could go a little faster. That's okay, because then they start to make sure that they feel comfortable telling you the truth, and they don't make up exaggerations, and they don't try to just tell you what you want. They actually give you the real truth. And there's that area that I think a lot of people get caught up in because they feel like their employees or partners are lying to them, or not just lying point blank. There may be just a little white gray area somewhere there. They're like, well, that's not exactly, I don't really feel good about this conversation. I don't really think you're doing what you said you're going to do, or I don't really understand what's going on here. Because I feel like maybe you're just trying to play me, or you're trying to tell me what I want. And what I actually want you to do is do it, or tell me what I could do to help you do it. And so business people can get caught up in that. And this, the last point of that would typically be because you are putting a lot of pressure on the person you're hiring to know everything about that job from the very beginning because they have experience. And here's what I'll tell you. Every person you hire or engage has a level of experience, but it's based on another rule book, not the one that you're currently operating within. And so you need to give them that space to teach them and train them and mentor them into your space and away from their previous experience before you expect them to fully take it on. Does that make sense when I say it that way?
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's good. Well, what steps do you take to build that trust between the business owner and the partners or the employees to release them to do the job and trust that they'll do the job?
It's really just being the first one to trust. And then when something goes wrong, if it wasn't done maliciously and you don't believe it was done out of a malicious intent to harm or change, or a fiduciary responsibility that was being negated, but mostly it was either just timing or a decision that maybe could have been made a different way. I think that, you know, giving them that grace and that space is very important to figuring out what level of trust they end up with. So I'm always a kind of a trust first, verify later situation. And if I can feel comfortable in that, because it's my risk to allow that to occur, then I'm giving them a space to show me what they're willing to do, what they're capable of doing. The moment I realize something has changed or something is no longer in balance, or I caught you in a lie, you're out. And that's a very clear statement from the very beginning of any conversation I have. And frankly, just watching my people rise themselves out of challenges and difficulties they faced building their own businesses with us has shown me exactly who they are. As they say, the cream of the crop rises to the top, right? So I've been able to see that process work. And in the same way as I homeschool my daughters with my wife, and I see my four daughters going and doing things and growing up in the uniqueness of each of their individual personalities, which sometimes just cracks me up because they both came from us and how are you so different? Right. And I see them growing up. I see where some of them have challenges with that. Some of them have challenges with the gray area when they think they're going to get in trouble for doing things. And others are just very strong and want to go this certain direction, but need wrangled in a little bit on the way they do things. And at the end, it's just, well, am I going to be willing to take the time to sit down and have that conversation and manage them instead of just saying, well, these are my priorities. I can't do that. I don't have the time. So in changing this, you have to change the language. If you're listening to this today, you have to change the way you think about the priorities of your time, energy, and attention, especially that falls backwards into money. Why? If I say I don't have time to do something, what I'm actually saying to that person is you're not a priority, right? You're not a priority right now. My priorities supersede you, or other priorities supersede you. And you might as well just look at them in the face and say they're not a priority, right? Because it's very difficult to come to the table and say, you know, you're all of my things supersede yours in this way. And we have to change that language because we actually can make the time. What we actually have is a time prioritization issue. Okay. We get busy. We got all these things. We got family. We got to get home. We got this job. We got other things we got to get done. And so we feel like we're constantly rushed because really at the end of the day, we're simply not prioritizing time correctly. We are putting some priorities above others. And then, you know, we're looking at time in a very wrong way. We're seeing it as all scarcity when time is actually in abundance. And if we can shift the way we say this language, instead of saying, I don't have to do this, I say, I get to do this. And as I train my language into my builders and I train that into my daughters, I don't accept that language that says I can't or that I have to. What you do say is you get to do this, because your alternatives are you don't get to do it, you don't get paid. You don't get to do it, you could do it somewhere else. Or you just simply change the language by which you empower yourself to take responsibility for the things you're doing. You're not a victimization of time. You're not being victimized by it. We all have the same amount of time, okay? In the day, we don't have the same amount of time in life, but we all have the same amount of time in the day. And so how we prioritize that against certain individuals or situations or family and work, you know, you have to look at the way you speak that language out. It will be an empowerment to your people, your partners, and your employees and your family if you change the way you speak about priorities. And if you don't have your priorities and time management set as a business owner, you will fail in everything we've talked about today, because that's the one area you can fail in as a business owner.
Well, I will never forget when I first sent out two guys to take care of some properties for a day. The next morning when we were at the shop loading and our little morning meeting that we have, they asked me, did you drive by the houses we moved yesterday and look at the yards? I said, no. I trust you to do the job. If there's an issue, the homeowner will call me and we'll deal with it at that point. I'm not going to create a problem if there's not a problem. I trust right. you. So I wanted them to know that, number one, I've trained you. I've taught you everything I know about doing the job exactly the way I would do it. And if you did your job, then the jobs are done just like I would do them. So I trust you. And I think moments like that helps build that confidence between employees and business owners, to where the employee doesn't feel like they're being micromanaged or that I'm looking over their shoulder every day or following them around, checking jobs. So,
yeah, and if you can't hire an A player, you find a B player and you train them to become an A player.
Right.
I suggested one of the ways you do that is you give them the trust capable of becoming an A player and you find out how far and how fast they can go.
Well, are there any daily habits that you have that helps your team members do their job?
Yeah, I check in on everybody every day. How's it going? Good morning. How are you doing? Is there anything you need from me today? I personally get myself ready for the day by walking 4 miles a day with my wife. So a physical exercise, a decompression. I try to always get at least 6 hours of sleep. Every night, so that I'm in a good mental state to take care of myself. I've done a lot more physical work on myself to prepare as I got a little older. I'm 49. I'm not going to last forever. So I've been doing more things physically to kind of control myself in both, you know, mindset and body. And I'm down 40 pounds now because of that. And, you know, I do a lot of mental and physical control. I live on a homestead of 50 plus acres. So I'm always out doing something physical all the time. In this property, right? And we I love my wood stove. We're out here in the Ozark Mountains, so it gets cold.
Nice.
And so I put a lot of wood away, which means I got to cut and chainsaw and drag and haul and do a lot of wood. And now girls are a little older, so they'll help dad now when it's time to, you know, unload the wood. So I keep them busy with that too, which is a part of just cross-training their physical side, not their mental too. But it is a lot of mental over physical. And I know you know that firsthand from your own personal experience, right? As mental and depression can kick in when physical becomes a problem. And so really, yeah, my coping mechanisms are one of the biggest things I do in order to maintain my support and being able to continue to give. As a dad, one of the things I think, as a husband and a father and a businessman, but I think it crosses all of those things as a pattern of behavior you will do in your home life, what you do in your business. And if you're separating the two of those things, then you're basically two-faced and you got to be careful with that. So for me, as a dad and a father and a husband, is to show up and provide anything my daughter and daughters and wife need ahead of myself, right? So I get the last of things, and I'm okay with that because I'm a provider, I'm a hustler, I do things for life and business. This is what I do, but I want my kids to know that they always have a priority. My wife is a priority, and then what I get, you know, comes last, and that's okay. It just means that in the last, you know, like all the opportunity and stuff we've created and the businesses that have done well and everything, I just, until the last 5 years, I didn't really feel like even buying myself a truck So, you know, I got myself a new truck, but that was only in the last 5 years, you know, things that I got that I knew wasn't taking from my family. Yeah. So I think that, you know, you prepare yourself mentally to do these things, to be a giver, to be a care provider. You put yourself as in the role of that as a man, and you double down on what's necessary to get it done. And then you provide that same level of support to everybody in your business equally by supporting them in every, you know, possible way you can. And that should be your reward. And so that has become my reward. That's why I sleep good at night. That's why I go to rest easy, is I know that people are doing it, and they don't, I know they don't want to let me down. And I know that they know that I'm there for them whenever they need me. And, you know, I just check in and say, how are you doing? What do you need? Is there something that, you know, can, that I can help you with? And usually they're like, nope, we got it. And we'll let you know if we need anything. Right. And that's good. I trust that and I understand it, but I do a lot of personal work on being able to let go of those things, let going that fear, that risk. And like you said, you send those two guys out on that job. Well, what's the worst that could happen? Well, they screw the job up. You lose the client. Can you get another client? Yes. Is it really something to cry over? Probably not. Right. It's probably not. And so right. At that point, if you're not going to be willing to do that and you're not, then you're going to be that person. Again, we talked about a minute ago, who falls back and like, I'm just going to do it all myself because no one else can be trusted to do it. And you're going to get stuck. I'm going to get stuck doing it by yourself for the rest of your life.
Well, you said something there. You are in your business what you are in your home.
Yes.
And that is so good because I think a lot of people get confused. They want to be a good boss, but they're not necessarily a good father or a good husband. Or they're a great father, great husband, but they're not a good boss. And it's impossible to play both of those fields.
Dude, it's mind-numbingly difficult. The guys I see that do it, I'm like, you're wearing yourself out. Just stay one. Pick one.
Yeah.
Stay in your lane.
So with that being said, I think it comes down to your mindset. What do you think of your family? What do you think of your business? Are you just a guy with a mower, or are you running a legitimate business in your community? And so let me ask you, what is the biggest mindset shift that has helped you go from a worker to a business owner?
I read a book once that really kind of refocused my concern about giving up trust and financial and, you know, letting others take lead. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyways by Susan Jeffries. And part of that question I asked a minute ago came out of that. And that is, you know, what's the worst that can happen? If you in your moment can put yourself into what's the worst that can happen in this situation, accept that, understand it, think away the deal with it. Even if it doesn't happen, you've already sort of kind of prepared yourself mentally to deal with it because you get to, not because you have to. And to put yourself in that position to say, I will dedicate the time or energy or attention or money or whatever is necessary to fix it, should it go this way. And if it doesn't go this way, then we'll go that way. And once you've assessed that risk level, then you let it go, right? You don't, what is, you know, what about everything? What if this, what about that? What if, you know, what if this, what if it doesn't happen next year? What if this doesn't happen next week? Like, people in business can get themselves caught into this, you know, idea that there's a certain requirement of things to happen in a certain time frame, and they get their mind all jacked up on what their priorities should be. So I think the success mindset, and one that really pivoted for me, was the realization that to assess a situation is to look at it for what it is, to see what the possibilities of it are, fully negative or fully positive, and then deal with it. And then realize that if you're not willing to deal with that, then you're never going to have the failures required to get the experience that brings the wisdom. And you can't get to the wisdom without the experience. Having learned how to become a father and a husband through a very difficult divorce and a marriage that collapsed, and having to assess what was my problem in that relationship that allowed that to occur, and what could I do better, and how could I be a better man, a better husband. I luckily didn't have children during that time frame, so really it was mostly about, well, why did this occur and what did I, you know, have problems with, to later on finding the love of my life and getting married and having this wonderful family event. But then 10 years after we got married, we ended up in a bankruptcy and had to deal with that situation from a bad business dealing that went south and, you know, got out of whack really fast, and had to go through that bankruptcy process. And then, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Well, I had $567 in my bank account. I can tell you what the worst that can happen. It is giving up, right? It's giving up. and never risking anything to see what the reward potentials are. And I will never regret that I've risked it all and gained all in the process of living life so that I could fully say I understand what that looks like. Those who are still trying to understand or trying to avoid that pain or those challenges will ultimately end up meeting them head on. The difference will be they simply aren't in the right mindset to overcome it. Right. It will overcome them instead.
Well, you will overcome or you will be overcome. So, you know.
That's basically the only two ways. It either gets better or it gets worse. But the control of which one ends up being easier and which one's being harder is you.
Right.
So my realization was, well, this is crap. This is embarrassing. I've let my family down and my, you know, I have friends and family that don't really want to talk to me right now because I am that thing that they think I am. And then they want me to get a job, but I'm not going to go do that because I'm on the path of, you know, making my life as a business and my lifestyle as my family. And so I'm not just going to go back and get another job. And the realization that, you know, if I'm going to get this thing figured out, I'm going to work my way out of it. So I got to work because there wasn't any time to complain.
Well, speaking of books, I read a book and I'm reading it again. Mm-hmm. It's called The Mountain Is You.
Mm-hmm.
It's an excellent book. If there's a problem, it's me. I need to be a better boss. I need to be a better husband. I need to be a better man. I need to represent my business better in my community. Because when you're a business owner, everything you do points right back at your business. And that's why I try to tell people, they're not just buying a yard mowing, or they're not just paying you to trim the bushes. They're investing in you, your reputation, your goals, what you want to achieve in that job. So they're investing in you and the mindset. You know, it just, if you think you're a loser, you've already lost, you know. But if you
if you already come beating yourself up, you'll be your worst enemy. There's no doubt about that.
Well, what else would you like to tell us about what your business is, what products you sell, where people can shop for your business products, and go from there?
Well, you probably heard of this thing called Amazon, right?
Yes, sir.
So if anybody's shopping on Amazon, you can check out my products there. We have quite a variety of different products on there. We've got a ice cream maker called the Blizzy, which is doing extremely well after launching here recently, which is super cool. It makes ice cream on the countertop in 30 minutes or less. You just pour the ice cream mix in the top, you wait, and then you just pull the handle and out comes soft serve. So people are absolutely loving that machine. It's on Amazon. You can make homemade ice cream at home in 30 minutes or less. It's a super cool product that we launched recently. We've got a coffee brand called Embrista. For those who love coffee, which I do, we have a coffee brand that sells a digital brew master that has a built-in grinder, and we also sell an espresso machine that is doing extremely well if you like espresso. We sell bed sheets in a company called Linen and Lane, where we have bed sheets in there that are amazing bamboo based microfiber sheets, so they're cool and they're warm, and that's also on Amazon. And I could keep going because we got like 12 of these that we sell. We sell all physical products manufactured, created, developed, discovered, built, and sold by us in our different brands. And we predominantly sell on Amazon, but also mention the other channels we sell as well. We work under an arrangement with those who want to do it with us in a 12-month consulting agreement to help them launch a brand. For those who might be aspiring entrepreneurs, and you can go to voltagedm.com to check that out. That's voltagedigitalmarketing.com. And of course, all social medias. If you look up my last name, Twa, or go to Voltage, you'll find me on one of the social medias. We're all over the place. And you can even check out my book, Almost Automated Income with FBA, which is also on Amazon as well. And there are, development of brands and product types that we launch with the goal of specifically getting them out to 5 years and exiting them. So everything we build is built as a saleable asset from the ground up from the very beginning. And so there's no side hustle or hobby businesses here. These are all, you know, true businesses with brand development and multi-products so that we can move them into the market. And, you know, we have investors lining up at the door to buy them. So There's lots of huge opportunity. I jokingly tell everybody this is the second oldest profession in the world, which is selling physical products. Everybody knows what the first one is, right? We don't sell those. But yeah, there's plenty of products and upside. It's a huge market. In fact, in about 15 years, according to market research from Bank of America, Forrester Research, even the Department of Commerce, we're going to invert retail to online commerce. So what is still a majority of retail sales over online e-commerce sales is actually going to flip. So all the movement of product sales is literally moving online. So there is this huge generational wealth transfer that's happening right now. It started about 6 or 7 years ago, and through that time frame, we saw hyper growth as mobile purchases surpassed desktop for the first time ever in 2021. So more people buy on their mobile phones now than ever, which is giving them the ability to purchase something anywhere and everywhere that they want to buy something. And Amazon is a juggernaut of sales machines. It's about 6,000 units a minute moving through Amazon's whole ecosystem. Most people know about it as it arrives to their door when they order things. We jokingly say in my house, if my wife hasn't ordered something in 45 minutes, Amazon calls her to find out if she's okay. They're checking in on us, make sure you're okay, Mr. Wah. Stuff shows up all the time, and we use that infrastructure to deliver our products. So we don't have to warehouse them. We don't have to ship them. We don't have to deal with the returns and everything else. Amazon does that. Nice. And when I move it out to the different sales channels, like our website, or I go to TikTok with those sales channels, Amazon also delivers our product too. So it becomes a multi-channel, infrastructure of planes, trains, and automobiles. It's a miracle the dang thing even works as well as it does. Honestly, it's a huge machine. And so we set that up about 12 years ago. We launched our first brand, got to our first 7 figures in sales around 2015, and built in processes and standard operating procedures. We eventually developed a software to support the internal operations. We call it Greenlight. It's advanced now through AI. We have an intelligence data engine called Cayman that we developed that helps us discover the products using AI and Amazon's actual data that we get from Amazon sales. So we understand exactly the demand and what's in the market. And then we follow a process by which we launch the products into the market to find out which ones the market wants from us. And when the market tells us which ones it wants, we give them more product. And it's a repeatable process, and it's a scalable process. We've had business owners and brands go to tens of millions a year in 5 years or less. And it's a huge market of opportunity. Sell everywhere in the United States because it's a total, we don't sell just locally. We can sell products to people all over the country through that infrastructure, which is super great because it opens up that whole marketplace. It's beyond local. So there's positives and negatives. I understand local challenges with, small businesses and, dealing with Amazon, for example, or any online marketplace. We live in a town of 1,800 people. So, we try to support the small businesses here that we can too. There's negatives to working with large companies, of course, but there are positives, especially when it comes to, opportunities for aspiring entrepreneurs to build a company and build up a lifestyle business, which is one of the things I've taught people how to do because that's what I did. I built this business up and I get to live here with my family and homeschool them and live in the country and live my lifestyle and have all these businesses running online. So there's a tremendous amount of opportunity.
And how long have you been in business?
Let's see, this will be 18 going on 19 years now.
In those 18 or 19 years, as you look back from where you are today to where you started,
yes,
is there something you would have done different to expedite success?
Here's my problem with that. If I changed too much, I may not have 4 daughters. That'd be really sad. If I change too much, I might not have found my wife.
Right.
If I change too much, I don't know where I'd be. And I really like where I am. Yeah. I like where I'm in business. I like where I live. I like so many things. And honestly, there's a lot that I could go back and really just rip off like 10 things that I, I don't want to change this. Dumb stuff. Like, I wouldn't have sold the Bitcoin that I had. I might have invested in more Amazon stock. Those kinds of things, right? I would have tried to catch on sooner when my business partners were stealing money out of the back of the company and I didn't even know it until I went bankrupt. Those are things that I wouldn't, but at the end, those are such tremendous lessons in life. That's so much coulda, woulda, shoulda, but ultimately it created a much stronger person you see in front of you, someone who has a lot more faith. than they used to have in life and business and something greater than me, as I believe in God and Jesus Christ. Those are things that I know that if I hadn't gone through those struggles, I wouldn't have found a way to be closer to God. And so I don't know if I'm answering it the way you intended the question to go, but for me, I really wouldn't change a whole lot because I really like wording it up.
That's perfect. I love the answer. I am a believer. I believe in God. I believe he's my savior. And I know that if it wasn't for him when I was going through my throat cancer, that I would not be here today. When the doctors looked at me and said, you have a tumor the size of a golf ball in your voice box. It's wrapping around your vocal cords, and it is paralyzing your vocal cords. If we don't get it out, you have 2 weeks to live. You'll die in your sleep because the tumor will close off your airway, and you will not be able to breathe.
Wow.
So I went to surgery not knowing if I would ever speak again because he told me there was a great possibility that he would have to take my whole larynx to get rid of it.
Wow.
But I
what a challenge.
Went to surgery, tears streaming down my cheeks, telling my wife and my two small kids at that time, Daddy loves you. I love you, babe. You know, not knowing if I'd ever be able to tell them that again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very difficult, hard time for us as a family, for me as a man, because, you know, I wanted to be the provider. I wanted to be the
strong
guy, you know.
And I get it.
So just
I just don't know how anybody can do life without faith, quite honestly. Business and most examples I would give, and even my own and yours, it just doesn't operate without faith.
Right.
I don't know how you do it without faith, quite honestly.
Right.
Most of my friends who run businesses that are, you know, as the same or even larger than mine are faith-believing people. They don't walk in the world the same way, and I think they're successful because of that. And I know it has a lot to do with just their faith and their belief of things that are greater than what we can currently see. And I honestly don't know how anybody can look at the way things are, way they could be, and not examine it through the eyes of faith. I personally don't understand that.
Right.
Too much fear,
yeah.
Too much concern, too much unknown, you know? And when you put all that aside, it's much easier to focus on the things that matter.
Well, I had to pray, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. You know,
right?
Because
well, we all have those moments, man. I had some unbelief moments. You know, I did.
And
I get it. Mine wasn't with my own health. Mine was dealing with my wife, who had a hysterectomy that went sideways. And when she was supposed to come out of the hospital in the second day after recovering, went into a fight for her life. She died in front of me. And one time they had to, got overdosed on morphine by the doctor in the hospital, and that coded out. And then they resuscitated her in front of us. And then she went into an emergency surgery because she had a bleed from a cauterizing machine that failed to cauterize. And so she had like 6 liters of blood up in her cavity, which were causing just extreme pain. And so they tried to solve that problem with the first surgery, and that didn't work. So they went back to the second surgery, and that didn't work. And they were into the third surgery within 36 hours. And she coded out once on the table while she was in there as well, and they resuscitated her.
Wow.
And so by the time I got down 36 hours later, I had 4 small children under the age of 5. And a young wife and a life that all of a sudden for 3 days, I wasn't sure I wasn't spending the rest of my life without my wife and dealing with small children. Thankfully, God, you know, healed her through that process and took a year to recover. But I had to face that moment where I thought, man, that's it. I'm going to be a dad of 4 girls by myself. That was a tough moment of faith. That was a tough moment of recognizing what is happening.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate so much you bringing your faith into the podcast, because I think we need to get that out there in the podcast community and share our testimonies. I have a Facebook group. It's called the Green Industry Prayer Group, to where people can leave a prayer request or share a testimony of victory.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I just think we need each other And
we do.
If you expressing your faith on my podcast can help a lawn care guy, you know, get enough strength to get up and go to work tomorrow, it was worth it.
Get up and go.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. That's our freedom, right? That's my five F's: faith at the top, and then you got friends, family, finances, and freedom. Without freedom of choice, you know, what else do we have, right? We have our freedom.
Right.
At the end of the day, and this is our opportunity to spread that freedom, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, is there one piece of advice that you could give our listeners to encourage them?
Yeah. That's a big question. One piece of advice. I would just remind people that the mountains they carry, you were supposed to climb. So you have to figure out how to let those go. And typically the process is to remember to leave your excuses at the door. Your opportunity will start at the end of your excuses. So
that's good.
Get up and go.
That is so good. Well, I really appreciate you being a guest on the show tonight.
I'm very honored. Thank you for having me.
Your insight, your wisdom, and your experiences has given our listeners some actionable things that they can set in place in their business to help them begin to work on their business and not in their business. You know, the trust issue that you talked about, putting your faith in your employees or your partners, you know, all of that just rings home so well to our listeners, because I'm sure there are lawn care professionals out there that might be a little hesitant to release the jobs to people to do because they want to be on scene. They want to be involved in every aspect. And so you have given us some actionable things that we can do to help us grow, to help us scale our business, and to be a better man, to be a better husband, to be a better father, to be a better business owner. And that's my desire. I want to be better. So I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us, your testimony, and I'm so happy that God touched your wife and saved her life, and that your four children can grow up with a mommy and a daddy. So I am just grateful for everything that you shared with us tonight. And we're going to call this a wrap. And until we meet again, always remember the grass is greener where you water it. So thank you for joining the Lawn Hustle. And I appreciate you listening to our show. And we will talk again real soon.